The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
It's now time to turn our attention to the law as it relates to you in this country. And guess who is in the building? Andisa, and she's on time this morning, so that's a good thing. Andisa, all right, you have the microphone with
yes,
you there?
Yes.
All right, so let me just make sure if I can just get this done. This is just take a minute. All right, so Andisa West is in the building, and we're chatting with the law as it relates to you.
Mm-hmm.
And let's talk a little bit about what's taking place with our Constitution, one of the biggest things that's happening in the country right now. And that story, you can get it on page seven this morning, as it relates to the Law Association over the criticism of a rushed CJ appointment,
yes,
given the fact that back in 2008, a precedent was set. And that's the thing with law, we like to refer to case,
mm-hmm,
precedent. So why are we quarreling about this if a precedent was already set?
Well,
good morning, Andisa.
Good morning. Well, the thing about it is, at the end of the day, we are in fact guided by the Constitution of the Republic of Trinidad and Tobago.
Mm-hmm.
And even before we go into that, we have to remember that we have what they term as the Westminster Model type Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, those constitutions that came out of an Act of Parliament from Westminster, because we had to go to the UK and petition for our independence.
Mm-hmm.
Features of that particular constitution is that we have a bicameral legislature, we have the lower house, upper house, we have separation of powers, and we have an independent judiciary. So when we're talking about separation of powers, we have the three arms of the state, the executive, the legislative, and the judiciary. And it shouldn't appear as though one is delving into the realm of the other. It shouldn't appear as though the politicians are delving into the realm, which is why we need to have an independent judiciary. In order to have that, our constitution states how things should function, particularly as it relates to the appointment of the Chief Justice. Section 102 of the constitution says that that is done by the president after consultation with the prime minister and the leader of the opposition. So now we have a situation where it appears as though, well, at least what the opposition leader is saying is that she requested for the process to be halted. So it appears as though the process as outlined in the constitution wasn't particularly followed. And I just want to say that the person that was selected is amazing. I think that he's an excellent choice for Chief Justice. The problem, however, is whether the process, and not necessarily a problem with the person, but more so a problem with the process in which the entire appointment of the Chief Justice occurred.
Isn't this constitution not making sense, could be deemed null and void, could be deemed ridiculous, and I will tell you why I use the term ridiculous. If it is, as the president of a republic of Trinidad and Tobago, I'm the president.
Yes.
And I could veto the nominated names coming from the leader of the opposition and that of the prime minister. They could give me a name X and the opposition say I want W, and I say I put in B.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody could challenge me. Then why do I consult if the last say rests with me and I could veto and say, well, look, I'm not taking on your choice. I mean, taking on your choice.
Yeah.
There's mine. What's the point of talking to you in the first place?
Well, I mean, the final decision rests in the president, because it is the president after consultation with the prime minister and the leader of the opposition. But this section outlines the process, that there has to be consultation with the prime minister, with the leader of the opposition, before a decision is made. And there are cases that says what consultation includes. So even if you look at the release from the Law Association, they say, well, for starters, you have to indicate who are the persons you are considering, the choice that you are, that is the forerunner, and you have to at least give reasonable time for the consultation to occur. So even though the president will have the final say, a challenge could be mounting to say, hey, proper consultation as dictated by the constitution wasn't particularly followed.
What is the time frame? Does the constitution
It doesn't state a set time, so it doesn't say 1 week consultation. But in law, we have the term reasonable time. Is ours reasonable time? Especially when you look at the letters that are now being circulated in the public domain. The letter that was sent to the leader of the opposition doesn't necessarily indicate who are the persons being considered. And it doesn't even state that that particular appellate judge, now Chief Justice, is the forerunner to become Chief Justice of Trinidad and Tobago. And again, it is so sad because I had interactions with now Chief Justice Ronnie Buduse, because he is a lecturer at the Hugh Whiting Law School, and he's such an amazing person. He's usually on the ground, he's hands-on. I could tell the change that he's going to bring to the judiciary. So it's kind of disheartening that his appointment is now being overshadowed by whether the proper process was followed that led to his particular appointment.
The letter that the president sent, the acting president sent out,
yes,
was in the wee hours of the morning? Could we say that?
The thing about it is there were several letters, because apparently, well, I don't know what exactly occurred, but at first it was a situation where past Chief Justice Ivor Archie asked for time to go on vacation for personal business, and letters were sent to the Prime Minister and the leader of the opposition asking if they agree with the appointment of, I think, Justice of Appeal Mosai for him to act as Chief Justice.
Wait, back it up. I missed that. Repeat.
Yes. So, firstly...
What happened firstly?
The past Chief Justice, Ivor Archie, he had previously asked for time off to go on vacation for personal business. And there was letters sent, obviously, because there has to be consultation, to the Prime Minister and the opposition leader asking if they are in agreement with Justice of Appeal Mosai acting as Chief Justice for that period that Ivor Archie, past Chief Justice Ivor Archie, would have been out of the jurisdiction. They agreed. However, in the same time that he was supposed to be on vacation, he then resigns abruptly. So there was a sudden resignation. A letter was sent after hours.
Well, I'm guessing that the first letter was sent at around 7 p.m.
Yes, and then another letter was sent after hours after the resignation of Ivor Archie, telling the opposition leader and, of course, the Prime Minister that, well, he has not resigned. Send recommendations of who you think should be the next Chief Justice, because that's usually what the consultation process should be.
The Prime Minister sent back a response. Could the Prime Minister get the letter after about 7 o'clock?
Yeah.
And eventually she responded and sent back, well, choose, because I have nobody. You big, you do you.
She responded, the opposition leader, because remember, the Constitution says consultation with the Prime Minister and the leader of the opposition.
So the Prime Minister
didn't care. The Prime Minister responded,
and reneged.
Possibly. The opposition leader did not respond at that time, because I mean it's 7 p.m., by the morning time, there's a second letter being sent saying...
That's it, you have until 1 o'clock.
Saying, I sent your first letter, I didn't get a response.
You have until
by 1 o'clock, let me know what you think about. I'm considering selecting a person. The person isn't named. I'm considering selecting a person from the appellate bench. Let me know what you think. And then by 4 o'clock, we see the appointment.
But did the opposition respond at all?
And then afterwards, she responded with a whole long letter saying, I want this process to be halted.
Hold on. Yeah. When did she respond? Because the president made it very clear.
Yeah.
He said, I sent a letter. When he sent the letter at around 7 o'clock, he received a response from the prime minister saying, hey, I'm cool, you do whatever, so there's no consultation here. You do you. Whatever name you put up.
I don't necessarily think it's a situation of saying you cool, do whatever.
Well,
there is no consultation, because the Constitution says that it has to be consultation.
All right, so you consulted me, you tell me this and that, I tell you, okay, go through. So you consulted me.
One of the parties.
So the other party, a letter was followed through, and I'm not playing devil's advocate, I'm not trying to be difficult, but we're just walking through the process, right? A follow-up letter came because, you know, we had Gabby next morning. Oh, let me just say that. His Excellency, Acting President Wade Mark, got to be next morning. Yawn. Check my email. Oh my gosh, nothing was done. All right. Reach out again. By 1 p.m., I need a response. Did she respond and say, halt?
She responded and
before
said,
the 1 p.m. deadline?
But the thing about it is, I'm not certain when the letter was sent, because it is
I'm
the
getting
time.
That it was after the appointment. The woman say, hey, always stop.
My whole thing is that, as the Law Association pointed out, first of all, the letter that was sent saying that you have until 1 p.m. didn't particularly indicate who is the forerunner for the particular position. So you didn't say that the person that I'm considering is Justice of Appeal Ronnie Buduseng. He has this long, stellar career before him. This is the reasons why I'm selecting him. The other person who we could possibly consider is XY. It doesn't say that. The very vague letter that was sent, given a time limit, and even if you look at the release from the Law Association, they say that, and there's cases to the effect, that if you are consulting, and if you are given time, reasonable time has to be given. Especially when, at the point in time, the Standing Finance going on in Parliament, the opposition leaders possibly in Parliament debating, having conversation about the budget. So was reasonable time given for a response to be received? And the thing about it, I just want to say again, he's such an amazing selection.
We know he's a runny light, all right, we get that.
It's so sad that the process that was followed, anything about it, this isn't. And I just also want to say, let me just go back. We had the independence constitution, which was changed a few times. The most recent change was in 1976 when we had the Republican constitution. And before that happened, we had the Wooden Commission making recommendations on some of the changes that should occur. Because previously we had the selection of the Chief Justice was only done after consultation with the Prime Minister only. And one of their recommendations was that it should be done after consultation with the Prime Minister and Leader of the Opposition. And the thing about that is, even though the recommendations of the Wooden Commissions weren't accepted and they essentially hired an independent person to make the changes, the thing about it is, we can see that there was the change from it being after consultation with the Prime Minister only to consultation with the Prime Minister and the Leader of the Opposition. And even in law generally, when we are considering what a particular piece of legislation means, one of the things that we will do is look at supporting documents. So for instance, we would read the Hansard to see what was the intention of the legislator when they were making this particular piece of law. So if we look at the fact that it changed from it being consultation from the Prime Minister only to consultation from the Prime Minister and the Leader of the Opposition, it is clear that that was an intentional change. So you can't necessarily overlook one of the parties, because the whole point about it is the Prime Minister is a political seat. So you don't want it to appear as though there's any undue political influence into the selection. That's essentially it. And it isn't just whether the person would actually have any political interference, but also the appearance of it.
And this is my point, Andisa. We don't want that. We have heard a lot of complaints over the years, politicians interfering in police matters and judicial matters, and we've heard it. So my thing is, why are we not revisiting this piece of legislation, this piece of constitutional law, where it says I have to consult with a politician for a name? Because if the president came in under the PNM,
right,
and the, as in this case,
right,
her excellency is she became president under the PNM,
right,
and then we understand his excellency acting president Wade Mark is under the, he was a member of the UNC.
yes.
He has been a very, very strong advocate in Parliament, a very powerful guy with the UNC. So we have this gentleman in this position where he sent out this letter and this has to be done.
Yeah.
My thing is, why consult with these parties when these... Because if I become president under you and you now lose and you in opposition and I consult Jenny Gemani, why is to say I wouldn't take your name? And if I do take your name, that doesn't have political bias in there.
Yeah. So the thing about it, there are issues with our constitution that we need to iron out. And the thing about it, this isn't new. These issues have been ventilated before. As a matter of fact, the past government under the leadership of former Prime Minister Keith Rowley, there was the National Advisory Committee on Constitutional Reform, and they made a report that was laid in Parliament that outlined some of the changes that should be done to our constitution. And let me just quote one of the recommendations that they were made. So we have identified an issue, particularly that the process to appoint the Chief Justice should probably be altered so that it isn't resting in the hands of politicians, i.e. the Prime Minister and the Leader of the Opposition. Here the report of the National Advisory Committee. And as a matter of fact, they went all over Trinidad and Tobago and was asking citizens what they think. And they say the Chief Justice should be appointed by the President in their discretion on the advice of an independent advisory committee. So they recognized, even before this occurred, that this could possibly be an issue. And they recommended that it shouldn't be based on the consultation from the two political figures, but from an independent advisory committee. This report was laid in Parliament. This report could be accessed by anybody who has access to the internet. So it isn't It wouldn't take a rocket scientist to say what would be the solution to this particular problem, because we want our institution to be functioning at the best that they can, especially an important institution such as the judiciary. So, and if we recognize that one of the pillars of our democracy is having an independent judiciary, at least the highest holder of that office, it should have a transparent process to allow the selection of that particular person.
Well, I'm glad that you mentioned that.
Yes.
Plain devil's advocate here.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't the CJ, the former CJ, announced months ago that he was resigning?
Yes.
Now, he probably was supposed to go on vacation, somebody act, and then he come back and resign. Okay, I choose, you know what, I don't want a vacation, I am done with this. I go on. You can't legally stop me. I send my resignation. That's one. If he said this was going to happen and a recommended name was put in place that was agreed by both opposition and prime minister and government to act, while this was happening, wouldn't it be prudent of the opposition and the prime minister to say, well, look, okay, this, put, I know you're going, let me get my names, let me see who I want and have that ready?
Possibly, because he did in fact announce that he was going to resign during his speech at the beginning of the law term. So they could have possibly started their at least thinking process to think who they would want to replace him. But at the end of the day, there's a process to follow, and the seat only becomes vacant when the Chief Justice resigns, because we can't touch the positions of the judiciary at all whatsoever. And in instances where the seat becomes vacant, there are a process in place for that as well. 103 makes provision for when the seat of the Chief Justice becomes vacant. We could have appointed an acting until the process is actually followed properly.
All right, so we're going to switch seats. We're keeping Andisa for a little bit as we get back.
Now, a station that's giving you back the power to speak your mind. The all-new Talk Radio. Freedom 106.5. Engage with Davey on the all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
All right, guys, good morning. Welcome back to Freedom 106.5 FM. We have a packed morning this morning inside this second hour. You'll be chatting with Tusker in the next hour, at least for 30 minutes before we go live over the Hyatt Regency Hotel for the Trinidad and Tobago Stock Market Exchange Conference. I want to give you that information in a little bit. All right, and when I get that, I'll just pull it up and I'll give you guys the insight as to what you can look forward to. We are continuing our conversation with Andisa West, attorney at law, as we deal with the constitutional law in Trinidad and Tobago. Now, I don't know if Andisa could remember, but the process with Ivor Archie and Satnarayan Sharma that happened back in 2008, were proper consultation taken place? Are you aware? Do you know? Have any insight? Can you share?
So the thing about that was also a very...
contentious.
Yeah, because he resigned abruptly as well. He resigned on, I think it was January the 23rd in 2008, and then Ivor Archie, past Chief Justice, was appointed the next day. But the thing about that, they possibly had, the thing about it is, it isn't how quick the process occurred, but in this situation, two things is the issues. Firstly, it occurred quickly in a situation where the opposition leader is now saying that at the end of it, she wants the process to be halted. So when that happened, we didn't necessarily have a situation where the opposition leader or any of the parties coming out and saying, hey, I wasn't properly consulted then. They possibly had their consultation during that time and he was appointed, because, I mean, there was a build-up to the resignation of that particular Chief Justice because of the situation that was occurring. And is it really a precedent that we want to set where one of the highest, not just one of, it is the highest officers in the judiciary, the Chief Justice, we want that position to be selected quickly, and this is just the person, and it's surrounded by doubt. This is the judiciary we are talking about. It should be an independent judiciary. It should appear as though it is an independent judiciary. And we don't necessarily want a situation where the opposition leader is coming out and saying, hey, I want this process to be halted. And while she is saying, I want this process to be halted, we are in President's House giving this particular person the instruments of appointment. That is the issue that I'm having. That firstly, not the time. It could happen. They could consult quickly if they choose to do so. But in this situation, the parties aren't saying that they were the parties are saying that they weren't properly consulted. And in this particular situation, even the release from the Law Association, and let me just read a section of that particular release. They said, on settled principles, the constitutional obligation to consult requires the president to inform those with whom he must consult of his proposed candidate or candidates and the reasons for supporting his preliminary choice. That consultation takes place at a point in time when the president has not yet made up his mind and that adequate time be given for consideration of the president's proposal. We could clearly see that none of those things were considered in that particular consultation process. And as I said, at the end of the day, it rests in the decision of the president. But the process is that consultation has to occur. And if you could say that proper consultation, then the process wasn't properly followed.
What is the redress that the opposition can take now?
Well, anybody, not just the opposition, could challenge the appointment and say it's unconstitutional because it didn't follow the principles of the constitution. And then his appointment could possibly be revoked all over again. But that's that's based on if anybody wants to do it. Because everybody probably saying the same thing, that he's a good choice. So that's based on if the opposition has the will. Because at the end of the day, we don't necessarily want to set a precedent where we are not considering
what our
constitution says. Yeah.
Somebody says, Davey, is there a set criteria to select the CJ? And if so, what value is there in consultation? If there is no criteria and just a selection based on experience and accolades, etc., and the president has the final say, there is little value in consultation as it is a mere courtesy to consult. And this is the point. But Andisa did mention earlier in the program that, you know, there's supposed to be a rewriting of this law, a revisiting mm-hmm. of this piece of constitutional legislation that, you know, it's archaic, dinosauric. we it's illegal to hang a clothesline across a roadway.
Yeah.
But who the hell doing that?
There's a lot of things. I mean, the thing about it
weird.
Is our history is a history where we had slavery, we had indentureship, we fought for the freedoms, rights and freedoms that we have today. We had to petition and go to Westminster. We have a Westminster type constitution. Even the way how our parliament is set up mirrors the way how the parliament set up is in the UK. And as an independent nation who is supposed to be charting their course, now is the time to revisit this. So even in our constitution, we still I am an advocate for removing the Privy Council and going to TCJ. Our constitution still has that. Our constitution still has the savings law clause, which at the time of independence, we didn't necessarily want it to be a situation where we just stop and there's no laws and it's just chaos. So we included a clause saying all the laws that existed before continues. Is it still in effect? And because of that, there are so many things that we can't change, one being the death penalty. So a lot of people say that we should restart hanging, but in our
It
was never removed because it can't be easily removed unless and until Parliament decides to remove it. Because the courts have always said that it is saved law, a term called saved law, because we have a saving law clause in our constitution. So there are a lot of things that has to be revamped. And there were several commissions that gave recommendations. The learned seniors before me, who are way smarter than me, have given all the recommendations. So we don't need to pull the answers out of our hat. It's there. Documents laid in Parliament.
Can the Prime Minister has the power to trigger the removal of a CJ via 137 of the Constitution? Are you aware?
The thing about it is the principle of an independent judiciary demands that the judges can't be removed easily. So the provisions, there possibly is a provision for it to happen, but only for cause. That's like if it is a serious situation, they could no longer function. But generally, it shouldn't be a situation where, firstly, persons could select who the judges are. So a judge is usually selected by Judicial Legal Service Commission. And secondly, they have security of tenure. They have a set time on when they would retire, which is 75 years old. And before that, you can't remove them unless it is for cause. So even with the whole situation with Aya Caesar, now Justice Aya Caesar, when she was elevated, she resigned. I don't know if you could remember that whole situation where she resigned and she took it to court and she said she was forced to resign.
Yeah, she said she
took it all the way to the Privy Council and they said that you can't force her to resign and she's now a justice. She's now a judge.
Yeah,
she was instated because you can't remove them.
To.
Exactly. And if you come and you say that, because the whole point of it is that we don't want any person, any politician being able to influence them and say, well, you gave this judgment, you're removed. You understand? We don't want to say, well, you gave this judgment, I'm going to reduce your pay. You can't even touch their pay. That's why they have tax-free, that's why they are paid that much. Because we don't necessarily want them to be starving and suffering. And they are now dependent on the politicians to receive some kind of money. Everything about the judges are up top, out of reach, because we are trying to preserve the integrity of the judiciary.
I love the way you just explained this. You know, and I mean, in a country where corruption is rampant and accused of being clear and present, we want to be in a situation where these persons are remunerated so well that there is no attempt, there's no temptation to receive any sort of bribe or pay or payoff, you know, or kickbacks on anything.
Nope. They have tax-free pay. They are paid well. They are paid from the consolidated fund. They have the J's on their cards. They could go down the bus route. Everything about them is reserved because we don't want anything. We don't want a situation where, you know, you bring an action against the government and this particular judge rules against the government, and then the next day we hear that this judge is gone. The constitution protects that. They could only be removed when they are retired, 75 years, and before that, only for cause. That's only if they really and truly can't function, and you have to bring good reason as to why you want this particular judge to be removed. As I said, Aya Cesar, she issued her resignation, and then later on, she came and said she was forced to do it, carried it all the way to the Privy Council, and now she's Justice Aya Cesar. She's a judge because you cannot.
So she was a magistrate before?
She was a magistrate. She was the chief magistrate.
She was the chief magistrate. Mm-hmm. And there was a controversy, allegedly, that the former chief justice pressed for her to leave.
Yes. So when she was elevated, she was the chief magistrate and she left a lot of party matters. And it caused a whole lot of issues. And then she essentially said that she resigned. Like, if they want to resign, they can. If you decide you no longer to do it, sure. So she essentially said that she resigned just to end all the bacchanal essentially that was happening. But later on, she came and she said that she was forced to do so. That it was the Chief Justice who came and said whatever. And she was forced to resign. And in that situation, you can't force a judge to resign.
So they brought her back, not as Chief Magistrate anymore.
No.
But an elevated position as a judge now because... Mm-hmm. And then they paid her for
she
it.
And she was back paid for the time because she's... Her appointment happened when she received her instruments of appointment. So she was supposed to be functioning in that particular road from since then, if she wasn't forced to resign. So you don't necessarily want anybody, any politician, coming and forcing a judge to resign. You understand what I mean?
But then, you know, the urgency of the Law Association, I don't know if you heard any talks in the corridor where these legal luminaries are pressing the issue for constitutional reform as it relates this. Because from the explanation we are given, I am not satisfied. Mm-hmm. I love the explanation. Thank you for clarity. But I'm not happy about the fact that I have to consult with you.
Mm-hmm.
And again, depending on where I fall on the spectrum in my appointment as president of this country, under which administration, I feel compelled, more or less, to... Now, the one president that didn't feel compelled was... the late A.N.R. Robinson. He received his appointment under the UNC administration.
Yeah.
And when the time came,
yes,
he voted.
He's elected.
Patrick Manning.
Yeah.
So he was one. And that is showing true independence as far as I am concerned. Yeah. But then your hand's still in the cookie jar because
The thing about it is our constitution tries to help the situation. There are kinks and there are several commissions that outline the kinks. So even with the selection of the president, it isn't just that the prime minister comes and select this person and you are president. They have to vote. All members of the parliament has to vote, the independent bench, etc. Obviously, if you command the majority, the person who you put forward is going to select.
Yeah.
So possibly one of the recommendations could be that an independent institution should be in charge of firstly selecting our president. Another thing that should happen is an independent institution should probably be in charge of selecting who our senior counsels would be. Now, we have seen time, and every year we'll see the selection of senior counsel, and every year we'll quarrel about it. only senior counsel Israel Khan, he took a constitutional motion and he tried to challenge it, but he failed. So it has to really and truly be the will of the parliament to determine to change that particular process. Another thing is that we should possibly change the way in which our Chief Justice is selected, because we don't necessarily want it to be based on the decision of political figures, because the Prime Minister and the opposition leader are both political figures. And the thing about it is, I'm saying this again, we had a whole national advisory committee who went all over Trinidad and Tobago and who issued a report, laid the report in Parliament and gave these recommendations. So at this point now, it is up to our Parliament to go in Parliament and have the will to make the changes.
Because you can't infiltrate, I mean, the accusations levied against the judiciary sometimes is that there's political interference with them. And as again, these are the same legal luminaries, and some of them went on to be politicians.
Yeah.
Because Mrs. Kamala Prasad Bisesa, Basdeo Pandey, they were lawyers before.
Yes, and
they
we became actually politicians. Have, I wouldn't say her name, but we have a judge who was in the political arena and is now a judge. So there are so much of things that happen, and we're like, oh, these are holes in our system that undermines the way in which people see the system. Because, you know, in law, we see justice shouldn't be done. It should also be seen to be done. So it isn't just that, okay, if you're selected, you will be fine. But at least for the people, the citizens, to at least have some kind of trust in our institution. And the thing about it is our whole entire structure is based on the constitution. So we need to ensure that that particular document is a sound document. And not only is it not sound, but we follow what is stated in there. We can't just accept, take this because it works for me and not take it because it doesn't work for me. That isn't how it goes. That shouldn't be the process, and that should not be a precedent to be set, because we don't necessarily want next how much ever years we have somebody saying, well, Chief Justice Ivor Archie, I'm Chief Justice Ronnie Boodoo Singh was elected in a day, so we could do it because a precedent was set. We don't want to set bad precedents.
Yeah. All right, let me take a quick call. Okay, the person gone. I was going to give you less than 30 seconds to make your contributions. And let me hear this one very quickly.
This message is for the Americans. When you listen...
All right, cool. Waste of time. Waste my 10 seconds there. Good morning, Davey. Your guest says that the precedent needs to be set, but precedent was set in 2008 with the appointment of Mr. Ivor Archie as CJ, and I now understand the meaning of eater food lawyers. Now, let's be clear. I am no attorney, but I want to prove that this segment yields fruit and people learn. What I learned in this segment is that there's no set time frame for consultation.
No.
So even though Ivor Archie was selected as CJ back then, we cannot, it will be, we can't put our mouth in gear and say that consultation wasn't done. We don't know.
Consultation was possibly done within that time
within
frame.
Within that time frame.
And we didn't have an opposition leader coming out and saying that they weren't properly consulted.
That's my point. So we can't even say that that precedent was set that we selected CJ in a day.
Yeah.
It could have happened. And that is what Andisa is saying. Now, we gave excuse and leeway because the Standing Finance Committee is currently ongoing in Parliament at this time, so the opposition leader could have been busy and sidetracked. But that is no excuse.
Yeah, and the Constitution does make provision for situations like this. So an acting CJ could have been appointed while the consultation process was being done. So there are a process in place for that. So I'm not saying that it didn't happen before, but is it... when it happened at that time, consultation possibly happened. It doesn't say that it has to be in a week. It doesn't give a time frame. But what worries me about this particular situation is the time frame in which it happened, when what the surrounding circumstances, the letter was sent 7 p.m., a next letter was sent in the morning, and then automatically we see somebody being sworn in. And then after all that, we then had an opposition leader coming out and saying that she wants the process to be halted. That is what is the worrying part, because the section doesn't say you have to consult the Prime Minister or the Leader of the Opposition. It says you have to consult the Prime Minister and the Leader of the Opposition. Both persons are on the same footing. And the reason for that is because they try to make that particular position be independent. So if they could both come together and agree on this person, they think that the person might possibly be an independent person. Obviously, we know the holes in that. But that, I think, is the guy. And as I said previously, it was only after consultation with the Prime Minister that was changed to include and, not or, and the leader of the opposition, and that is the problem.
Thank you very much, Andisa, for clearing up these constitutional infringements and infractions with us this morning. And if due process of law was not followed, what can be... Well, you see, once somebody brings it up, they will have to put somebody to act, remove his appointment, revoke it. What can happen quickly?
It possibly wouldn't remove it. He would only be removed at the end when a decision is given on his appointment. So,
and if a decision is say, well, all right, we still... But again... Okay, bring a motion. Okay, we take it up. What is the name you wanted? Well, I wanted this person and that person. Okay, well, I don't like them. I'm going with Ronnie. Anything else? And there's no reason for going with Ronnie. He's a distinguished, you know. Anything else? So it could be a waste of taxpayers' money and time.
Well, I mean, it wouldn't be taxpayers. It would be the person who bring the constitutional motion. They would have to pay for that. So it would be a private person, more than likely. So it wouldn't be the government. The government will have to pay to defend it. But at the end of the day, the private person would have to pay to bring that motion.
Opposition leader, please keep quiet on the matter and let's move forward. That's a wrap for us here this morning.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.